Hello and welcome to Why This Movie, a podcast about our favorite movies and why we love them so much. It's October, and everything feels just a little more ominous. Around here, in New England anyway. I saw an actual black cat running around outside just the other day, seriously. This time of year, I'm thinking about the scary movies that I love. I'm not really a fan of horror movies for the sake of horror movies, but I love when a film can be scary and well-crafted without resorting to schlock or gratuitous violence. My favorite scary movie is Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. A couple years ago, the Somerville Theater in Massachusetts, for the record, my favorite local theater that's still in operation, screened a 35mm print of Psycho that I was fortunate enough to see, and it was astonishing. I mean, I'd obviously seen it several times before then, but there's something about seeing it on an actual film print, like a print that made its way through theaters back when it first came out. I mean, to me, it was easy to see why it freaked people out so much when it was released 65 years ago. There's something about seeing an old movie on film rather than a digital file that changes the experience altogether, almost like the celluloid itself is haunted. Ooh. In 1960, Alfred Hitchcock, known for films that push the limits of suspense and romance, released a shocking tale of murder and intrigue called Psycho in stark black and white.
Here we have a quiet little motel, when in fact it has now become known as the scene of the crime.
Do you have a vacancy?
Oh, we have 12 vacancies.
You know, this is the first place it looks like it's hiding from the world.
I think that we're all in our private traps, clamped in them. And none of us can ever get out.
Is anyone at home?
Oh, that must be my mother.
Is anything wrong?
Am I acting as if there's something wrong?
She's not missing so much as she's run away.
Put me down! Mother! Oh, God! Mother!
What are you running away from?
She looked like a wrong one to you.
It's not as if she were a maniac. She just goes a little mad sometimes.
Why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Hitchcock, already a name from directing popular movies with the likes of Doris Day, Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart, and Grace Kelly, had further become a known personality from his weekly appearances on Alfred Hitchcock Presents, in which he introduced each episode's story with some droll commentary.
Good evening. I was just about to send greetings to an old friend. I'm sure modern civilized methods of homicide are much more efficient, but I don't care for them. I abhor violence. That is why on this program we use stabbings, shooting, and garrotings only when they are absolutely essential to the plot or when the whim strikes us. Tonight's play begins in...
This is how I first became aware of Alfred Hitchcock, watching reruns of his show on Nick at Night when I couldn't sleep. And I would have been very young, like maybe 6 or 7 at the time. So I was well aware of the man and his reputation, but until Psycho, I had never seen any of his movies. It doesn't matter if you're watching this late at night or, in my case, on a summer morning on VHS before going to a tuba lesson with Mr. Cahal. It's unnerving and immediately puts you on edge. Something is going to happen, and it's not going to be pleasant or safe. The opening scene tells the viewer of the time and date, Friday, December 11th, 2:43 p.m. The inclusion of this detail adds to how ominous it feels, as though every specific matter should have our attention in order to understand what is about to unfold. No such title appears throughout the rest of the movie, by the way. So I think the director was just doing this to mess with us. In a seedy little motel room in Phoenix, Marion Crane and Sam Loomis, Janet Leigh and John Gavin, are getting dressed after an illicit afternoon tryst. Here they discuss the realities complicating their relationship, namely their distance from one another and his financial insecurity following a divorce. Back at the office, Marion is entrusted by her boss with a large sum of cash, $40,000. To deposit to the bank before going home after she complains of a headache. But Marion doesn't go to the bank. She takes the cash, stuffed into an envelope, and drives west toward Fairvale, California, where her boyfriend lives. Whatever is in her mind, a plan or the beginnings of a plan, have taken hold amid her desperation despite being conflicted about the whole thing. On her way out of town, a group of pedestrians crosses the street while she waits in her car, a line of anonymous passers-by until... Marion's boss crosses the street, stopping when he recognizes her. She's not home in bed with a headache. She's up to something. She's been caught. Marion keeps driving, tormented by imagined conversations about the trouble she's in.
No, I haven't the faintest idea. As I said, I last saw your sister when she left this office on Friday. She said she didn't feel well and wanted to leave early. I said she could. That was the last I saw. Oh, wait a minute. I did see her sometime later driving. I think you'd better come over here to my office, quick. Carolyn, get Mr. Cassidy for me. After all, Cassidy, I told you, all that cash. I'm not taking the responsibility. Oh, for heaven's sake. Girl works for you for 10 years, you trust her. All right, yes, you better come over.
Well, I ain't about to kiss off $40,000. I'll get it back, and if any of it's missing, I'll replace it with her fine, soft flesh. I'll track her, never you doubt it.
Oh, hold on, Cassidy. I still can't believe... It must be some kind of a mystery. I can't...
You check with the bank, no? They never laid eyes on her, no? You still trusting? Hot creeper, she sat there while I dumped it out. Hardly even looked at it. Planning and even flirting with me.
And as she drives, it gets darker and darker, and rainier and rainier, until she has to stop for the night. She ends up at the only motel in sight, the Bates Motel, appearing through the rainy windshield with its struggling neon light against a black sky. Just beyond the motel, overlooking the building, is a large Gothic house with the silhouette of a woman in the window. Here, Marion meets Norman Bates, played by Anthony Perkins, a slight, awkward man who shows her to her room and then invites her to have a quiet supper with him before turning in for the night.
You understand? I don't hate her. I hate what she's become. I hate the illness.
Wouldn't it be better if you put her someplace?
You mean an institution? A madhouse? People always call a madhouse someplace, don't they? Put her in someplace.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it to sound uncaring.
What do you know about caring? Have you ever seen the inside of one of those places? The laughing and the tears. And the cruel eyes studying you. My mother there. But she's harmless. She's as harmless as one of those stuffed birds.
I am sorry. I only felt... It seems she's hurting you. I meant well.
People always mean well. They cluck their thick tongues and shake their heads and suggest, oh, so very delicately. Of course, I've suggested it myself, but I hate to even think about it. She needs me. It's not as if she were a maniac, a raving thing. She just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
I won't go into the shower sequence here, as it's been dissected more than probably any scene in film history. I'm sure you know by now what happens. As Marion showers, a shadowy figure walks in, rips the curtain open, and stabs the poor woman to death. The point is that Marion, seemingly the main protagonist of the story, is murdered and disposed of after only about 45 minutes since the movie start. So now, who do we follow? Who are we rooting for? I think it's difficult to overstate how jarring this must have seemed to audiences of 1960. The leading lady is killed before halfway through the movie, leaving the perspective to shift to that of the mysterious man who runs the motel, someone who may or may not be a murderer. The irony is that movies have always seemed so safe to me. I would go so far as to say that being immersed in a movie is my safe space. And even though I love this movie, there's nothing about it that seems safe. It feels dangerous and unpredictable, even 65 years later. I envy the audiences of 1960, to be honest. A movie had such a better chance of being an event back then because fewer movies were released. When Psycho came out, a brilliant marketing campaign accompanied it, one in which cardboard cutouts of Hitchcock were placed in theater lobbies, warning that no latecomers would be admitted once each screening of Psycho had begun.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Alfred Hitchcock. I must apologize for inconveniencing you in this way. However, this queuing up and standing about is good for you. It will make you appreciate the seats inside. It will also make you appreciate Psycho. You see, Psycho is most enjoyable when viewed beginning at the beginning and proceeding to the end. I realize this is a revolutionary concept, but we have discovered that Psycho is unlike most motion pictures and does not improve when run backwards. That is all for now. You may continue to amuse yourselves by staring at the back of your neighbor's neck or watching the tactics of that forthright lady who seems determined to elbow her way to the front of the line.
So not only were moviegoers afraid of the content of Psycho, it was such an event that they were afraid to show up late and not be admitted inside and miss it altogether. We don't really have anything in our contemporary entertainment offerings to compare, really. Movies are shown for a few months, maybe, before being available to stream at home if they are released in theaters at all. Everything is so accessible now, it's difficult to understand the significance of this release or how much it captured the public's imagination.
It's one thing to watch movies. At Universal Studios Florida, you can feel them come alive.
Where are we? Look what's over there. Awesome. Run! Look at that cannon. Give it to me, hurry up. Betty, get it. Watch out. Hurry up, click it.
Wow. Come ride the movies at Universal Studios Florida.
When I first visited Universal Studios Florida at the age of 14, I was already obsessed with movies and knew I wanted to be involved with making them in my future, somehow. Back then, they had an attraction called Alfred Hitchcock, The Art of Making Movies. In it, we were victims of a 3D avian attack inspired by 1963's The Birds, followed by being led into a replica of the bathroom set from Psycho. This became a live-action presentation in which the shower scene was broken down with actors and analysis from Anthony Perkins.
What we're going to do now is show you the first 9 shots of the shower scene. As I call these shots out, they'll be appearing on the screens above us. So keep your eyes on those, because 3 of these shots have already been filmed. See if you can spot which ones they are. Camera?
Rolling.
Playback. And action. Shot 1. Shot 2. Shot 3. Okay. All right, let's see shot 4. All right, nice. You ready, Mom? Shot 5. Shot 6. Shot 7. Shot 8. Shot 9.
Cut. Excuse me, but maybe I can explain what went wrong here.
You see, Psycho was based on a real murder case. Years later, they made a much more graphic film based on the same case. It was called The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But Hitchcock felt the violence of the crime was just too...
I came away from that attraction with a prop film slate and used chalk to write my name in the director's slot as soon as I got home from vacation. The movie Psycho, the care with which it was constructed and then released, was and continues to be an inspiration for me as a storyteller. So, in this time of year, my advice is to treat yourself to 1960s Psycho. If you haven't seen it before, you're in for a wild ride. And if it's been a while, it's time to revisit it and feel its lasting power. Happy Halloween. Thank you for listening to Why This Movie. If you have a movie that you love that you'd like to discuss, email me at christopherallenmaloney@gmail.com. Be sure to spread the word by leaving us a rating and review, smashing the subscribe, clocking the T, everything.